And that brings us to the analysis of Shields and Gerson. That is syndicated columnist Mark Shields and Washington Post columnist Michael Gerson. David Brooks is away. Hello to both of you.
Judy.
So we've had a primary in New Hampshire. We now know what happened in the First in the Nation contest after Iowa, where there was some confusion about the results. Mark, what do we make of it?
Judy. Here's the bright side for the Democrats. It broke the turnout record after a disappointing turnout in Iowa a week before. Among Democrats, there was a new turnout record, so enthusiasm was up. Bernie Sanders got half as many votes as he got 4 years ago against Hillary Clinton. He beat Hillary Clinton by 57,000 votes. He beat Pete Buttigieg by 3,900 votes. And yet, winning is coming in first. And Bernie won. Bernie coming out of a popular vote, if not a delegate vote, win in Iowa, and a popular vote win in New Hampshire, has to be considered the front runner at this point.
Has to be considered the front runner. Any doubt about that?
No. I think that the biggest results of New Hampshire were results of exclusion. I think that Warren is now not competing very effectively for the left lane of the Democratic Party. Sanders really solidified that. And I think Biden took a real blow in these results coming in fifth, it was.
Fifth.
That, for the former vice president to do that. So, you have clarity on the left in the Democratic Party, but you do not have Bernie Sanders proving yet that he can go beyond his traditional coalition of young people and liberals. These results did not prove he can move beyond that. And if he's going to unite the party, he's going to need to do that.
Can he do that? That's the question.
Well, I'm not sure he can, but I think it's also, we ought to at least mention the other candidates quickly.
For sure.
Amy Klobuchar, after really having a disappointing showing in Iowa in her next to home state of Minnesota with a fifth, had a strong third, surprising third, and did it on those who disparage debates as being important events. I mean, it was her Friday night debate and her performance there that probably saved Bernie Sanders, if you think about it, because Joe Biden was collapsing, as Michael pointed out, and the Biden votes were up for grabs. They were either going to probably go to Buttigieg or to Amy Klobuchar. Amy Klobuchar got the lion's share. Based upon, in my judgment, her performance that night and Buttigieg's less than spectacular performance in the debate. He did very well. He had a strong second. He has been exceeded expectations more than anybody else in this race has beat Buttigieg. But now we go from what's called retail to wholesale. In retail, in Iowa, New Hampshire, by effort and energy, you can meet enough voters. You can talk with them. You can,
persuade
them.
Coffee shops,
exactly. Right. And you do it. And you have the time to do it. Right. And that's what the premium is upon. Now, Judy, it's landing on tarmacs. It's going to TV studios. 14 states on one day, on Super Tuesday. It changes, and the premium becomes money and resources a lot more than it does time and effort and human energy.
I agree with that, except for one thing.
Okay.
I think that Buttigieg and Klobuchar need to prove they can go to minority communities and get significant amount of support.
Yeah,
if I were Buttigieg, I'd have his supporters from Indiana down in South Carolina right now, spreading the word that this guy's acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's his main challenge, Buttigieg's main challenge?
Well, his main challenge is that he's the mayor of a small town and that was the mayor of a small town and has to keep proving that he can play in that league. So he has to keep winning in order to do that. But I think in order to do that, he's going to have to show that he can appeal to Hispanic and black voters. And I think that's a requirement.
And Nevada coming up a week from tomorrow, on the 22nd of February. Mark, there's a powerful culinary workers union there,
Absolutely. Which
said it's not endorsing.
Shot at Bernie Sanders.
Did take a shot. Yeah. They put out a flyer saying they don't like his single payer. I interviewed him on the program yesterday, and he said he does protect their workers. But the point is, he didn't get that boost that he would have liked.
Nor did Joe Biden.
Nor did Joe Biden.
No, and they are important. But you're right, and that is a Latino, Hispanic constituency, largely. And
coming back to Klobuchar quickly, though, Mark.
Sure.
I mean, you know, Pete Buttigieg has a lot to prove. She has something to prove, doesn't she?
Absolutely. Yeah. No. I mean, Michael spoke of Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders for the liberal, for the woman alley. She seems to have prevailed over Elizabeth Warren at this point. What she has to do, Judy, is put together a national campaign on the fly. You don't have time as your enemy.
Klobuchar.
She doesn't have the resources. She's got to raise money, hire people, and campaign in places all at the same time. She's got to do is figure out picking one or two states on Super Tuesday and figuring, I'm going to make my fight here, challenging Bernie. And Buttigieg, to the same degree, has to do the same thing. And making those the fight. We can't cover 14 states at once. Okay, there's going to be two or three that are going to emerge as the battleground. And it's going to be strategic for convincing the press and the public that these are the two or three states. And that's where I think Buttigieg and Klobuchar's chances lie.
So, Michael, we have a week from tomorrow is Nevada, and then the Saturday after that is South Carolina.
That's right.
Where you do have a different electorate, something more than 50% of the Democratic vote there is African American. So Buttigieg has his work cut out for him. So does Sanders, for that matter, and Klobuchar.
Exactly.
But let's not forget, I do want to come back to Biden and Elizabeth Warren, who faded. She came in ahead of Joe Biden, but far back, I think, from where some thought she might be.
Yeah, I agree with that. South Carolina is Joe Biden's last stand.
Absolutely.
I think that Warren has invested some time and attention in Nevada, and I think she's going to need to show some strength there in order to feel like that she can move along. But there is going to be a fight for that moderate liberal lane right now. Biden seems out of the running. Buttigieg and Klobuchar seem in the running, but then you have Bloomberg in the wings, essentially betting that all of them will fail, and that he will be the ultimate alternative to Bernie Sanders. And I don't know if that strategy works or not, but so far it's coming, you know, some of the steps have taken place.
But before we get to Bloomberg, and I want to ask you about that,
sure.
Mark, Joe Biden, I mean, he has come in a distant, fourth in Iowa, fifth in New Hampshire. He argues he can come back. That's only two states out of 50.
It is only two states out of 50.
I mean, has that been done before?
They're the two that gets the most attention every 4 years. I agree with Michael. South Carolina is it. There are no moral victories in South Carolina. Joe Biden has to win. And he was basing his confidence on his strong support in the African-American community. We saw the African-American community turn on a dime in 2008 when they were overwhelming for Hillary Clinton until Barack Obama won in Iowa. And once he won in Iowa, the African-American community in South Carolina said, my goodness, this fella really does have a chance, and they switched. I think Joe Biden now, who is running on electability, a no longer relevant thesis, has to bank on the loyalty of the African-American community and his long service and identity there and his service with Barack Obama. But that's it. I mean, that's it for him. Judy, when he said at the beginning of the debate, we took a gut punch in Iowa and I'm probably going to lose here. Anybody who was going to go door to door for him that weekend just said, wait a minute. And, you know,
people were honest
and left New Hampshire and said, well, maybe I'll look at Klobuchar and Buttigieg.
So let's come back to Michael Bloomberg, because you're right, Michael. He does seem to be out there waiting, spending, what, $300 million on advertising?
$350.
A modest amount. Is he in a position to benefit if this race remains muddled coming out
of as the focus comes to him, he has baggage, stop and frisk baggage as the mayor. He is, you know, if you watch commercials, at least where I am in Virginia, you see him with Barack Obama all the time. He's trying to establish that he cooperated with him. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so I think he's trying to, you know, take care of that. And he's going to have a unique advantage. I mean, completely untested with those 15 or 16 states on Super Tuesday, he's going to be able to spend a lot in each one of them.
And he suggests, Mark, that he's in his, whenever you see him making a speech, every time he's out there, he's prepared to go toe-to-toe with President Trump.
Yeah. In a strange way, I think that's a mistake. and one of the few mistakes he's made. I mean, Americans do not want a Trump versus Trump race. They don't want an insult race. I think one of the great appeals, sleeper appeals of Pete Buttigieg in this entire campaign is that he lowers the emotional thermostat in the room, that he speaks reasonably. But coming back to Michael Bloomberg, Judy, you're absolutely right. I've never seen anybody spend like this before. But his campaign has been totally controlled. He's never mixed it up. Now that even some mentioned they might not even go to debates, where you get a sense of people and how you feel about them. And Americans, in the final analysis, Michael worked for George W. Bush, the of the last seven Republican nominees, the only one to win a popular majority of the vote in a presidential election in 2004. Why did they vote for George W. Bush over John Kerry, who, I think by most estimates, won the three debates between the two men? Because they prefer I like over IQ. They were more comfortable with George W. There's no comfort level with Michael Bloomberg at this point. Nobody knows him. We don't know if he's got a temper, if he's got a sense of humor, if he's self-deprecating. Can he mix it up? He's never mixed it up in a debate or in Iowa or New Hampshire. I think that that's what we're going to have to find out. And if in a month from now we're talking about his spending rather than his ideas and how he's different and what he's going to do differently, we know where he is on climate change and gun control, then I think his campaign will be in trouble.
Well, the man they all want to remove from the White House, Donald Trump, has had quite a week or so, Michael, and just a little bit of time we have left. His campaign raised $60 million just in the month of January. I know we talked about Bloomberg money, but for the president, I mean, sweeping all the other Democratic candidates. And he's embroiled right now in this larger-than-life sort of contest, whatever you want to call it, with the Justice Department. Or you put that together with his the way he's come after people who were critical of him during the impeachment process. Is he building the case that is going to keep his supporters behind him and push him back to the White House, push him back to a second term in the White House?
Well, I think this campaign of retribution against his enemies, he has an enemies list that he's public about, unlike Richard Nixon, does in fact fit into his campaign strategy. His argument is us v. them, and them is the deep state, the Democrats, and the media. So when he picks these fights over the Stone trial or whatever, it is feeding into his narrative, which is really disrupt everything. You know, and I think that it's he feels it's working for him right now.
Mark, just a few seconds.
A few seconds, Judy. I mean, here's a man who's pushing prosecutors to prosecute James Comey and Andrew McCabe, and intervenes for Mike Flynn and for Roger Stone. Why Roger Stone? I think there's open speculation and very plausible. Roger Stone's the one person that could tie Donald Trump to WikiLeaks and to the Russians in the 2016.
You mean
campaign.
After all that investigation?
After all that investigation. I mean, that's what he did. That's what he was lying about. He was the intermediary. And I think that it's not out of loyalty or affection. I think it's out of vulnerability. He's still concerned with that 2016 election rather than worrying about 2020. Judy, how do you feel if you're Susan Collins, if you're Rob Portman, if you're Joni Ernst and said, oh, yes, we voted to acquit, but he's going to change. He'll be chastened. He'll be chastened. I mean, this is the new chastened Trump. I mean, he's unburdened and unfettered and scary.
Mark Shields, Michael Gerson, thank you both.